speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is the 23rd of January. It is Wednesday, 2019. Lots of great stuff to get to you today. Too much news once again, but I'll try to fit it all in. First, here's a report by John Baum.
As competitors to Netflix continue to appear over the horizon, Netflix made its market position clear in a company-wide letter, as CNBC reported. Our focus is not on Disney Plus, Amazon, or others, but on how we can improve our experience for others, Netflix said in a shareholder letter. We compete with and lose to Fortnite more than HBO. When YouTube went down globally for a few minutes in October, our viewing and sign-up spiked for that time. We compete so broadly with all of these providers that any one provider entering only makes a difference on the margin. But if there is a shred of morality and providence left in America, Netflix may not even be able to see the true threat to their success is themselves. Netflix has already garnered a reputation as allowing child pornography on their service. The Argentinian film, Desire, depicted 2 10-year-old girls in a sexual situation. Then there's the extremely perverse Netflix animated series Big Mouth, which critics argue is used to normalize pedophilia and groom preteens.
Fallopian, what a savory word.
As the Freedom Project summed up, writing, as one comment noted, the profanity and grotesque immorality and perversion make the show self-evidently unsuitable for children. On the other hand, the constant portrayal of young children's genitals and similar imagery make it self-evidently unsuitable for adults. In short, it is unsuitable for anyone but the most depraved minds. The real goal appears to be to corrupt and sexualize more young children.
Mom.
Ugh, I could eat you alive.
Mom, can you not do this in front of Andrew?
Oh, you smell like fresh buttered baby.
Netflix has a series out. It's a Netflix original cartoon called Big Mouth. And this show it just released its second season on Netflix earlier this month. And it celebrates, you know, pedophilia, abortion, masturbation for preteens. So it's a cartoon show about middle schoolers and the struggles of puberty. And one of the creators, Nick Kroll, calls it a perverted Wonder Years. And he admits, I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for telling kids to watch this show because it's super dirty. I do think because it's animated, we were able to say and do things that would have been very tough to do otherwise.
Now, Netflix has entered what some would regard as infuriating, uncharted territory with the Netflix original series Dancing Queen, a series that focuses on a dance teacher from Texas that walks a fine line in promoting the normalization of young children and the drag queen lifestyle.
What really sets Beyond Belief Dance Company apart from most other studios, not just in Texas. When I'm not teaching these little kids how to dance, and Broad Dom Diva of the South.
While the series doesn't go as far as the lunacy of Michael Ehrlich and the exploitation of Desmond the Amazing,
a ringleader, I guess you call him the ringleader of the club kids, Michael Ehrlich, has been on and in the scene for over 10 years. He's the only club kid veteran from our previous reports on this topic. Now, Michael Ehrlich's style has changed every time he's been here. His current look, if you look closely, it's sort of a, what do you call that, accident victim drug addict.
Our special guest, the amazing Desmond.
Hello.
All the way from Brooklyn. Drove through rush hour traffic to get here.
Dancing Queen carefully introduces the relationship between drag queens and children to a larger audience. And with the combination of the popularity of the new phenomena of drag kids and the marketing for the Netflix show Dancing Queen, Dancing Queen is either a timely, horrible coincidence or could be pushing the same subversive narrative found in other Netflix shows. So, with so many cut-the-cord offerings on the table, cutting off your Netflix subscription should be the first thing any red-blooded American with any sense of decency does post-haste. It has never been easier to be a part of the problem if you continue to subscribe, or the solution if you cancel today. John Baum reporting.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Harrison Smith once again sitting in for David Knight. He should be returning shortly. I know he's eager to do so. I know he's active on Twitter, roasting the liberals as if he never left. And he should be back shortly. I don't want to give too concrete of a timetable, but I know you folks out there that have been missing David Knight, myself included amongst those, will be happy to know that he will be returning very shortly. But in the meantime, I'll do my best to sit in and fill those shoes. Now, we have so much news from all over the world today. We are going to be talking about the yellow vests. We're going to be talking about the fact that Macron and Merkel are essentially creating an EU army. No debate, no conversation about it, nothing like that. They're just going to do it whether you like it or not. And the reason that they say that they're doing it is beyond hilarious. I mean, you want to talk about hypocrisy. This is hypocrisy manifest. Now, we also have, of course, Maduro in Venezuela being more or less unseated as protests erupt there. We have Israel and Iran rapidly accelerating their military conflict there. We will get into exactly what that entails. We have some very interesting stories about declassified research projects from the Pentagon that we'll get into. In the second and third hour, I will be joined by Eric Peters and Alex Newman. So some great conversations coming up in the next few hours. And of course, the Today Show will be airing the full interview with the Covington Catholic School, the main kid there, I guess you could say, Sandman. Which, can we get that song, Sandman? Mr. Sandman, I'd like to play that. But we will be monitoring the Today Show, waiting for that interview to happen, and we will be bringing you clips of that as soon as that airs. I have a whole stack just about the Covington boys case, because this has really taken the world by storm, taken America by storm, and has, you know, red-pilled the masses in a lot of ways, has exposed to a lot of people just how biased and unreliable the media is, and has shown just how vitriolic and toxic the mainstream press is, as well as just the vast majority of these, I like the term Twitterati, the leisureati, the Twitter blue check marks who wield inordinate power to sway the national narrative in this country. But of course, Davos is going on right now. Dan Lyman of InfoWars Europe is on the scene. He talked to Alex Jones yesterday. Let's hear what they had to say.
Look at the Audi right there with a Nazi symbol. It's an Audi A8. It's 200 miles an hour. It's one of the safest cars you can drive. We have a price. Listen to that. Woo! I mean, that is overpowered. People are pissed. But these arrogant people don't give a damn. Wow. France in bed with Germany to bring in a Hitlerian plan. Can't make that up. Our own Dan Lyman is on fire as usual.
Good to be back with you, Alex. It's been quite a few days here. As you know, a couple days ago, I was on the ground with the commoners in France and Paris for their protests against the global elite. And now I am in basically a luxury ski village in Switzerland with the global elite. So it's been quite a few days, as you can imagine. You were showing that wall there. Ironically, that wall is right in front of the Facebook office. I don't know if it's necessarily related to the Facebook office, but it's right there. And I don't see anyone at Facebook complaining about that wall. And there's walls all over the city that are protecting different hotels, event centers, and of course, the main event, and plenty of armed military and police that are keeping an eye on everything. And if you go where you're not supposed to, they will stop you. If you film something you're not supposed to, they will shut you down. So they can do that here to protect the elites, but we can't have that on our southern border. From my understanding, there were yellow vests on the ground in Aachen where they were signing that treaty today. And some of them apparently came all the way from France to protest against Macron, who has had to cancel his appearance here at Davos due apparently to instability in France. But, you know, that remains up for debate because he, of course, could be there to sign this treaty. And it's an interesting point. I wasn't aware that this treaty was
being signed today.
But I'd had to look it up on the way, and I said, wow, okay, so that's why Macron and Merkel aren't here. Merkel is scheduled to come tomorrow. But the coverage is so interesting. Anyone in the mainstream media is prefacing coverage of this treaty by saying that the far right are spinning conspiracy theories about the EU military. And even the Irish Times uses the word bland. The agreement is bland multiple times. I don't know if I've ever seen mainstream media talk about an agreement as bland. I think they're really trying to discourage people from paying any attention to this. You had the Prime Minister of Belgium last year, who has now been actually ousted partly because of the Yellow Vest protests in Belgium. Charles Michel, he actually warned Viktor Orban, basically, and we covered that at the time, that if Hungary didn't take more migrants, they maybe could face some military consequences. So these people just throw around these military threats all over the place. But when we talk about it, we're conspiracy theories. This year's a little bit different than last year. Of course, last year was a lot of hype with Trump coming. And then, of course, canceling this year. I believe Secretary of State Pompeo came in through a video feed today. But they were saying that the most anticipated guest this year would be Jair Bolsonaro from Brazil. And Bolsonaro delivered the opening speech today for the event. And apparently it was 6 minutes long. And he apparently didn't really say much. So people were kind of shocked by that. And I watched part of the speech. I don't speak Portuguese, but at least could get a gist of it. And Bolsonaro, he didn't look comfortable addressing this room of people. They're not his people, but from my understanding of who he is, and he probably loathes most of them. So I don't know if he was trolling them or just didn't feel comfortable, but it was an interesting start to the whole series of events with Bolsonaro. And they're definitely attacking him for this. They're saying this proves that he's stupid. They make the same arguments as with Trump. They say he's just a dumb far-right fascist, basically. Clearly, he's not an idiot, but I wonder what the impetus behind such a short speech would be. I mean, of course, he has speechwriters, so I'm wondering if he was just trolling them, to let them know that he disdains them, because he clearly does disdain the international socialists that are here in attendance.
Why do you think the globalists are trying to collapse the West, Dan Lyman?
It's a power thing, in my mind, for sure. I think we are the last bastion of of semblance of freedom, and if they can do away with us, they can do away with the last speed bump in their way. And I was picking through some of the things written by Klaus Schwab recently, that he's the one that founded the World Economic Forum, and he speaks very openly about drafting a blueprint for a shared global governance architecture. So there's no mistaking the meaning behind that. They do believe in a global governance. And he made another interesting point here in a blog that was only written a few months ago. He said, with advances in robotics and artificial intelligence in the context of aging societies, we will have to move from a narrative of production and consumption towards one of sharing and caring. That sounds like socialism or communism to me for the lay folk, and not for them, of course. Today, there was actually an American investor on the inside.
So that is, of course, Dan Lyman live from Davos talking to Alex Jones. You can find that video on Infowars.com. I wanted to cut in a little bit early and say what I thought was so funny about this. Obviously, this treaty that France and Germany are signing will reportedly, quote, strengthen the existing ties between Germany and France, in particular in the field of economics, foreign and security policy, education and culture, research and technology. Yes, they're trying to create a single nation, and it says it is intended as a step towards a European army. Now, last year, the German Chancellor Merkel said nation states should be willing to give up their sovereignty, but now she says that they need an army because of in case of an attack of our sovereignty. That's what she says. The fourth article is obliged to support each other, including through military force, in case of an attack on our sovereignty. That's right. Give up your sovereignty so your sovereignty doesn't get attacked. What? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Harrison Smith here on The David Knight Show. I want to keep talking about Europe a little bit, because that is where a lot of this stuff is going down, and a lot of very interesting things are coming from France and Germany. And, of course, their signing of this strange new treaty, which is essentially just helping to lay the groundwork to create the EU army, which, I remind you, ladies and gentlemen, was an insane conspiracy theory no more than, what, a year ago, if that? If this time last year you would have said, hey, the EU is trying to create an army, people would have said, BS, no, they're not, stop lying. Maybe 2 years. It's really come out since Donald Trump was elected president, and they found, the Europeans found, that NATO might not be as controllable by them as they thought it would be. Now, of course, NATO is the treaty that basically says America will provide security for all of Europe. As I'm just boiling it down to, you know, layman's terms, I guess you could say, which has allowed France, Germany, you know, all these European countries to not have to have their own military. Not just that, they haven't even been paying their dues for NATO. So yeah, when you talk about the amazing social network that France and Germany has, just remember that they're only able to uphold those social programs because of the way America funds and subsidizes their military protection. So then they have now decided that they are going to just come right out and say it. They want an EU army. People say, what? No, we've all said that we don't want that. And you said that we don't want that. And part of the whole thing about the EU was that, no, we'll never have an army. No, we're not trying to create a super state here. No, it's just a federation of states. We're not gonna have an army. Oh, what's that? Yes, okay. Yes, we are having an army now. And oh, you have something to say about it? You want to talk about it? You want to debate about it? No, we're just going to do it whether or not you like it. So that's what this is all about. Now, earlier in this week, Macron was in Versailles to assure – I mean, just the way the media puts this and the way the French government is trying to spin things is so patently false and so transparently backwards that it's almost funny, except you have to remind yourself that these people are hell-bent on destroying freedom worldwide. They're hell-bent on creating a single global – unelected governance system in which the very few select billionaires and elites of the world, royalty, all of these blue bloods will just sit on top. And you don't have to be elected. They will just dictate what the rest of us plebeians down here will do. Now, he was in Versailles, and this is from Reuters. President Emmanuel Macron told dozens of the world's most powerful executives on Monday that he would not follow the path of guillotined French royals and would continue to reform the French economy despite a sometimes violent popular revolt. I love that the French president is saying to a bunch of elite executives in the tech world, don't worry, I will not have my head chopped off. We will keep it under control. They will not decapitate me like they did to our king. He thinks he's a king. But on Monday, Macron told the business leaders that the yellow vest movements was a part of a bigger picture of middle class angst over globalization that gave rise to Brexit in Britain, as well as the rise of popular parties in Germany or Italy. The solution to the crisis, he says, is not to roll back what we've done in the last 18 months. No, no, no. I mean, that is what people are protesting about. They are explicitly saying it's what you've done over the last 18 months that has pushed it too far. We are not on board with the plan that you have decided for us. Actually, we have inherited from our forefathers a representative form of government, a form of government in which the people have a say and are not dictated to and overruled by the elites and royals that would deign to subjugate them. And it's explicitly with Macron, the globalist servant, the former Rothschild's banker that would, I say former, by the way, in air quotes, that would, you know, that they're coming out and saying, you know, it's precisely this is why we are protesting. And Macron comes out and says, that's not why. They just have angst. They are scared. They are like poor children and we must guide them to the globalist utopia that we have planned for them. Yeah, he's full of crap, but that's what he says in Versailles. And then we move to just yesterday, France and Germany pledging to defend each other in this new treaty. Now, again, this is so interesting on so many levels. We have, this is an article from Infowars.com. Macron and Merkel booed before signing the European Army Treaty. You saw the video in the last segment. Said the treaty will reportedly strengthen existing ties between Germany and France, in particular in the fields of economic, foreign and security policy, education and culture, research and technologies, climate and environment, as well as cooperation between border regions and civil societies, and is, quote, intended as a step towards a European army. Now, very interesting, and in this article, Paul Joseph Watson reminds us that during an event aimed at combating populism entitled Parliamentarianism in Tension, in the Tension of Globalization and National Sovereignty last year, the German chancellor brazenly said that, quote, nation states should be willing to give up their sovereignty today and that this should be done via an orderly process. This is what happens when you face them head on, when you stare them down and you demand that they tell you the truth or that they get out of the way. Yeah, it comes out. They're like, yeah, you know what? This is exactly what we're doing. We are trying to steal your sovereignty, which is so funny because then just yesterday, the 22nd of January, German Chancellor Angela Merkel says, the fourth article of the treaty says that we, Germany and France, are obliged to support each other, including through military force in case of an attack on our sovereignty. So there you go. In case of an attack on our sovereignty, we need to give up our sovereignty. It's totally insane. They just use whatever words they need to at the time that serve them for the moment in order to put forward their quote unquote progressive agenda of having an EU army. Why is this important? Why are they doing it right now? Because they're worried that as the yellow vest protests in France increase, as they enter their 11th week, Act 11 coming up this weekend, that they are going to have to bring in soldiers from other countries to put down that rebellion. Here's the interesting historical context of this. They are signing this treaty in Aachen, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a border town historically famous as the seat of power of Charlemagne, the 9th century Western Europe ruler and founder of the Holy Roman Empire. Speaking to journalists, Merkel endorsed the idea advocated by Macron of creating a joint European army. We have taken major steps in the field of military cooperation, and this is good and largely supported in this house. But I also have to say, seeing the developments in recent years, that we have to work on a vision to establish a real European army one day. So, folks, the fault lines are being established. I'm going to get into on the other side exactly why it's so interesting that they would choose the seat of Charlemagne to sign this treaty. There is symbolic significance there, as well as exactly what these fault lines are with Salvini in Italy coming out and saying we are now hooking up with Poland and we are going to be the nationalist bloc to oppose the heretofore unopposed globalist bloc in the EU and the UN. So exciting developments in Europe. We will get to American news. Don't worry, folks. I understand we're the most important country in the world, but we got to cover this European stuff because it is exciting and it has a long, long history that you need to know about. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Liberty, it's your move. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are on the topic of Europe and in particular European history because it is necessary to understand that in order to put into context what is going on in Europe now. Now, there are two important historical moments that are sort of being relived in a way. These are the French Revolution and the crowning of Holy Roman Emperor Charlemagne. Now, Charlemagne, also known as Charles the Great, is the son of Pepin the Short and was grandson of Charles the Hammer Martel, who was that heroic French warrior who stopped the Muslim invasion at Tours. So you have Charles Martel stopping the Islamic invasion of Europe, which this is another important historical context to put things in. The wave, the tide of Islam has continually surged up against the doors of Europe and have had to be militarily beaten back. It happened over, and it's happened in Vienna. It happened in, well, it happened in Constantinople, and they won. The tide overcame the Holy Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire at that point. And so then hundreds of years later, you have them completely taking over Spain, which they weren't kicked out until the Reconquista centuries later. But in the 700s, I think 734, somewhere around there, you have Charles Martel mounting a determined resistance against the invasion that stopped the Muslims, the Moors, from crossing over into France, crossing the Pyrenees, and taking over all of Europe. So we have to understand that the condition of Europe as a integral part of Christendom, as being a Christian society, only exists because of the exerted military efforts of people in Vienna, Charles Martel in Tours, all of these different things. So this has been a continual, you know, pushing back. Now they don't do it with big armies at the gate that you can fight back and mount a resistance against with your own army. Now they do it secretly. Now they're doing it with the help of NGOs. Now they're doing it with the help of the governments themselves, where before, you know, it's also a sort of form of reverse colonialism, where before you had first world countries going into third world countries and subjugating them and extracting their resources. Whereas now we have the governments of first world countries inviting third world populations into their country and doing the stealing of their own people for the third worlders. So if you don't have a grasp on history, at least at the very, you know, at the very least, a tenuous grasp of the eons and how they ebb and flow and what struggles have been overcome by our forefathers and what they fought for, why they decided to fight for it, why they didn't see the big, you know, Muslim invasion coming over the Pyrenees and go, oh, well, I guess we're Muslim now. You know, why would they fight against that? What ideology were they fighting for? What ideology were they willing to give their life for? And it's only with this understanding that you are able to put into context what's going on now. So that is Charlemagne, Charles the Great. He was actually crowned in an Italian town called Pavia. It's a church I've been to. And on a certain day of the year, at a certain time of the year, the sun shines through the window of the church and illuminates a spot right in the center of the church. It was built this way using astronomical, you know, calculus there and designing it to where exactly on this day at this hour, the sun shines through the light and illuminates the spot on the ground. That was where, of course, Charlemagne was kneeling as I believe the Pope was putting the crown on his head. Shocking and amazing, of course, the peasants and you know, various people around them. This was the style of using, you know, faux miracles, using the understanding of reality at the time in order to manipulate the people into thinking that this was ordained by God. It's the same mechanisms that are being used now to convince people that the EU army has to be created. They just are a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more learned at psychological manipulation rather than religious manipulation. But the same thing is going on now. And so what you had was the Roman Empire collapsing, right, in the 400s. Then you have the Byzantine Empire continuing, but where the Roman Empire collapsed in Western Europe, where you have all of France and some of Germany and the UK for a little while, where that collapsed, the governmental services were replaced by the church. And so for a while, it was sort of disparate kingdoms, and they were all held together tenuously by the church. And it was under Charlemagne that they sort of ratified it and tried to re-establish this Holy Roman Empire, as they called it, which was, yes, an attempt at a superstate, an attempt at a supranational confederation ruled by the church and the puppets that they controlled in the government of Charlemagne. So why am I rambling about Charlemagne and Charles the Great? Well, it's because his seat of power was a town called, and forgive me for my pronunciation, Aachen, A-A-C-H-E-N. It's a border town that is historically famous as the seat of power of Charlemagne, 9th century Western European ruler, and this is the place that was chosen, no doubt for its symbolism, no doubt for its powerful connection back to that former, Catholic Church run Holy Roman Empire, which, as the SNL skit says, was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire discussed. But this is a callback to those times. This is what they want. They want a single governmental organization that rules over everybody in a form of feudalism that is, instead of, reliant on religious or divine, dictates saying you are now king. No, now it is scientific. Now it is, climate change requires us to give up our sovereignty. Climate change requires us to, rule over you without hearing what you're saying, without taking into account what the people themselves have to consider. So that's what's happening right now. They are signing this treaty, which, as they say, is laying the groundwork for an EU army, which will be used to subjugate its people. It will be used against people like the Yellow Vest, and it will be used against people like Britain for trying to Brexit. Now, where does this intersect with the French Revolution? Well, I've explained it on the show before, but the French Revolution was a revolution of the regular people, the peasants, the common man, against the elites, against the international network of elites who supported each other and kept each other in power. So the nobles in France were marrying the nobles in Austria, were marrying the nobles in what would become Germany, were marrying the nobles in England. They were all in it together. And they found that during the French Revolution, there was the Estates General, the three estates, where the regular guy, the regular people, the nobody, well, I should say they're everybody else. So they're better to define as what they aren't. So the first two estates were the royalty and the clergy. So the nobles and the church, and then everyone else was the third estate. So that third estate, by far the biggest, by far the poorest. And when the two estates, the nobles and the church, refused to hear the third estate, refused to negotiate with the third estate, refused to bend to the third estate at all, that was when that third estate activated its power of populist, its power of being the engine of these countries to overthrow those two estates. Now, the danger, and this is the danger that things like the Yellow Vest are, at risk of falling into, is that then it was taken over by radical extremist socialists who took it way too far, started worshiping science as a god, and that's where it got really dangerous and deadly and bloody. We'd like to avoid that. And Macron is pretending like he's looking back into that history and saying, well, we have to listen to them. We can't do what they're doing. But he's doing exactly what they're doing. The king was decapitated because he kept trying to escape to Austria to bring a government in to subjugate his own people. That's what Macron is doing with Merkel right now. They haven't learned from history. They're repeating it. All right, folks, I'm going to get right into this. I want to play this whole video. I don't know if I'll be able to get to all of it. I might have to continue it on the other side here. But this is from the Jimmy Dore show. Now, before I show Jimmy Dore's repulsive face, I would like to point out that this man is despicable. This man is, I would characterize it as, directly responsible for the death of police officers when you had mass murderer, guy who shot police, who had videos explaining why he did it. And within these videos were clips of Jimmy Dore talking about the police, and this guy who shot the police were echoing his points exactly. This man is utterly repulsive to me. He spat in the face of Alex Jones when Alex Jones was on stage at the RNC. This man is despicable in many ways, and I would never deign show him on the show except to expose just how stupid he and, by proximity, other socialists are. So with that little caveat out of the way, let's go to this video, and I'll pause it occasionally.
One of the most unfortunate things about the Russiagate propaganda of the last 2 years is that a lot of people who consider themselves on the left have, for some reason, forgotten history and have embraced the FBI and the CIA, right? And as I, you know, I like to say about the CIA, that they, you know, they knock off democratically elected, they murder, rape, pillage, torture, and knock off democratically elected governments before breakfast.
All right, let's pause it real quick. I'm trying not to pause it too much, but he said a couple things there. He's confused at why the left just, you know, will go over to the side that they have opposed for so long. Well, the reason is because they have no principles. They have no actual, you know, real life understanding of the world. They will simply do whatever is convenient at the time to gain power. They are obsessed with power. FBI has the power. They will give over to the FBI. This is because they are a system and an ideology of subservience, not of individuality, not of self-fulfillment, but of dependence on a higher power. So, of course, they will defect to the higher power because they're weak, because they're weak people. He also seems to understand that Russiagate is propaganda. He does not extrapolate that and try to ask the question, why are they so obsessed with this propaganda? Why are they so obsessed with Donald Trump? But we get into this more in the clip. Let's continue.
About them. And the FBI, I tried to tell people that they, if you're a leftist organization, they are going to infiltrate you and they are going to ruin you because that's what they do. Right. They're right wing and they're.
Oh, yeah. They never infiltrate right wing action. Right. They never infiltrate right wing movements and try to disrupt that. Right. No, they just support those. Yeah. Let's ignore the entire militia movement for the time being that they infiltrated and destroyed. No. According to Jimmy Dore, they're right wing and they only infiltrate left wing organizations. They infiltrate organizations that threaten their power. You fool. Right wing or left wing. Continue.
The military-industrial complex, and you know, people look at you like you're some kind of a hippie, right? If you say stuff like that. So here's the former acting director of the FBI, and watch what he just blurts out. He just blurts out on Fox News. Watch
this. You take the election and you take the House, and you now convert all the committees that you have to investigating various aspects of the president of the United States.
So he's talking about the Democrats because they just took power in the House. He says, when you take the House and you take all the committees and now you're going to start investigating the president of the United States, he means the Democrats. He thinks Democrats are progressives, so he calls them progressives.
They are. So, you know,
watch this. Here we go. I'll start it. I'll go again from the beginning. Here we go.
When you take the election and you take the House and you now convert all the committees that you have to investigating various aspects of the president of the United States, then your lifeblood has to be to react to stories. So you're going to see more stories planted so that all these committees can have a lot of work to do.
So he just said, former director of the FBI, assistant director of the FBI, said this story was planted.
Yeah,
that's
duh.
That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. This story was planted so they could go get the president. So they could now use the machinations
planted by progressives in a progressive outlet.
Politicians
and can go after the president.
Who's got the control of government right now? Progressives. He means Democrats. Democrats.
Yes, they're the same.
Now watch the next thing he says.
I think this is just more of the same, and I think we can expect more of this because, quite honestly, the electorate in some places is putting more and more progressives and self-described socialists in positions. And ironically, years ago when I first got into the FBI, one of the missions of the FBI in its counterintelligence efforts was to try and keep these people out of government. Why? Because we would end up with massive dysfunction and massive disinformation and massive misinformation. And it seems to me that's where we're at today.
When I got into the FBI, it was our mission to keep these people, progressives, out of government. The assistant director of the FBI just told
you
that your own government is working against its own citizens to keep them out of government.
Yeah, let me pause right there and explain why Jimmy Dore is just an idiot of titanic proportions. He didn't even bother to Google this guy's name. He's acting like this guy got into the FBI to shut down Bernie Sanders. When this guy says in the early years, when I first got into the FBI, he means in the 1970s, Jimmy. He means during the height of the Cold War. He means when there actually was Russian infiltration trying to subvert the American democracy by putting in, you know, so-called progressives that were in fact communists and socialist agitators attempting to bring down the government of the United States. The FBI has always been embroiled. The CIA has always been embroiled in nonsense and in, you know, anti-freedom type of stuff. But that's not all they do. They actually have tons of patriots that work for the FBI and are fighting on behalf of America. And in the 1970s, the socialists and the communists, infiltrators in America, posed an existential threat to the sovereignty of the United States. You fool. Let's go back to the fool.
Now putting more of these progressives into power. He said the electorate. That's you. The citizens are expressing themselves through the poll, through the ballot box. You know, the thing that's sacred in America, that we get to vote. One man,
oh,
one
yeah,
vote.
So sacred. Just pause again. Does he not understand that the entire media structure is progressive? The entire, you know, the Democratic Party is like, they're not progressive. Yeah, they're progressive. Okay. If you want to call them that. I mean, these terms are meaningless to a certain point, but you have some sort of progressive, you know, person leaking or giving a story to a progressive outlet, BuzzFeed. And now the progressive Adam Schiff is using that BuzzFeed media article to investigate Donald Trump abusing his power because of a fake progressive news story. And then you have, oh, you people, you know, they want to stop you people from expressing your ability, your voting ability. And it's like, okay, but when the progressives own the media and they utterly lie and they completely undercut and destroy any semblance of reality in the electorate. And, you know, they elect somebody like, oh, I don't know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which any informed, you know, intelligent electorate would, you know, cut their own hands off before electing this woman. But the progressives in the media are able to manipulate the people, and the people in the FBI, the people in the CIA. Oh, I bet they're real, real upset at the fact that a bunch of slavering government slaves are coming out to vote for an expansion of their power. Yeah, I'm sure they're super, super upset at that. We're going to have to finish this video on the other side, but let's go back and finish up with what Jimmy's saying before he goes to his guest, which also is an interesting input here.
Representative Republic. He's saying it was
It's not democracy? I thought you liked democracy.
Somebody inside the government decided that a lot of people who are citizens don't get to have representation in the government. Who said that? The FBI does that. That's who these people are, you numbskulls. Swipes on the left. Even YouTubers tweeting out praise for Mueller. And, oh, we're going to have a rally for Mueller.
Yeah, what they're sheep, dude. Your side is full of sheep.
What a waste. You use your a YouTube show to prop up the FBI? What a human being.
He's got that right. Pause right there. I went to the rally that was held at the courthouse or at the city hall here in Austin. And that's what I was asking people. They were protesting in favor of Mueller. And I was walking around just going, why have you let the FBI, why have you let the spy state, the deep state, the unelected bureaucrats who constantly are obsessed with violating your rights and subjugating you beneath their bureaucratic rule? Why are you holding a rally in favor of them? You are supposed to be suspicious of the government. You're supposed to be this, you know, these people who are bringing down the power. Here they have you literally advocating and protesting on behalf of the spy state, the FBI and the CIA. Yeah, they've got them all mixed up. And Jimmy Dore's like, whoa, how is this happening? It's because your side is filled with sheep, you dingus. On the other side, we're going to go back to this video and hear them continually be confused at the world around them. I'll explain it. Don't worry.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
We're going to go right back into this video from Jimmy Dore, the Jimmy Dore Show, and hear what his guest has to say, and then examine how this illustrates their bottomless stupidity. Let's go back.
Let me bring in Aaron. Aaron, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I think that he gets wrong is when he talks about the job of the FBI to keep out progressives being in the past tense.
Yes.
Because I still think that they're doing that.
Really?
That
let's
now,
pause it. Let's pause it. Was it the FBI that got Bernie out of the election in 2016? Or was that entirely the DNC? Was that entirely Hillary Clinton? Was that entirely the Democratic establishment doing it? They didn't need help from the FBI. They need help from the FBI to come clean up their mess for them, to cover for them. So, of course, the FBI is in there to protect the establishment. So just like they helped the DNC, they covered for the DNC when they broke the law to destroy Bernie Sanders, they also use that same whole, you know, mess to go after Donald Trump, because both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump were ostensibly a threat to the establishment. Now, Bernie Sanders is a weak socialist, not actually a threat to the establishment, but he had some dangerous rhetoric that he would use. Donald Trump, actual like world-ending threat to the establishment. So let's keep going.
To what you're talking about, Jimmy, I think what I think a lot of our leftist allies and friends have missed is that how Russiagate is very much has been used and will continue to be used to empower those very forces that want to keep progressive politics.
So listen to this. They get it to a point. Keep going. They get it to a point.
Political life. I mean, just last week, we learned something extraordinary about what the FBI has done in this whole Trump-Russia probe, when we learned from the New York Times that the FBI opened up a counterintelligence investigation of Donald Trump as a possible Russian agent. Now, the story alludes to no evidence as being the basis for these concerns. So, you know, a few years ago, we heard stories about FBI agents intercepting wiretaps between Trump officials and Russians. Later on, like, that was debunked, and I think now those stories were clearly planted to help.
What is this, InfoWars?
For
he's making our argument.
Open up an investigation of Trump. So the Times makes clear there's no evidence to as the basis for that suspicion of Trump by the FBI. What it lists, though, as the basis for that suspicion is extraordinary. They talk about things like the FBI was alarmed because Trump was praising Russia on the campaign trail and was saying nice things about Vladimir Putin. They talk about the fact FBI was alarmed that the Republicans changed their platform to be softer on Russia, which, by the way, is not even true. All that happened is that a meaningless platform committee rejected an amendment and approved language that was pretty much putting it in line with what Obama's policy at the time when it comes to Ukraine and sending weapons there.
And let me just say this. If he really was a Manchurian candidate or an agent of Russia, boy, he certainly is the shittiest at throwing the dogs off the scent. Am I right? He's there on the campaign trail giving praise to Vladimir Putin. What the F? Are you kidding me? What kind of an agent would give himself away like that?
Not to mention what kind of agent then gets into office and then becomes a more hawkish president on Russia than Barack Obama.
Right.
Like, for example, that very issue of Ukraine, which was the subject of this meaningless platform about sending weapons. Well, so the platform was changed to be a bit more ambiguous. But when Trump came to office, when he's actually in power where it matters, he approved the weapon sales to Ukraine that Obama had rejected. And that's among many things that Trump has done.
Okay.
That is
okay.
Far
so
more hawkish.
They understand that Trump is not a Russian agent. They understand that the FBI is willing to break the law and, you know, commit fraud in order to target Donald Trump. So why are they not able to extrapolate that and go, okay, the whole of the media establishment is corrupt. The whole of the FBI is corrupt, or at least the main parts of it. They're all targeting Donald Trump because they see him as a threat. They're sitting there making the argument for Donald Trump. They're sitting there saying the stuff that we on InfoWars say, and yet if you ask them, they are rabidly anti-Trump. This is the cognitive dissonance. They get it to a point, and then they just go full retard. It's ridiculous.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Second hour of the David Knight Show on this, the 23rd of January, 2019. Happy Wednesday to you all. Harrison Smith sitting in once again for David Knight. We just saw on full display the, I mean, I don't even know whether to call it hypocrisy. It's like, I was saying to the crew earlier, it's like, I can tell Jimmy Dore has principles. It's just they're very stupid principles. He understands that the FBI is corrupt and the FBI is there to serve the establishment against the interests of the people. But then he is incapable of extrapolating from that and going, now, why does the FBI seemingly hate Trump? Why are they going after Trump? Why are they trying to destroy Trump? What he doesn't get is that Trump is the threat to the establishment. Trump by himself is like the most dangerous man that the globalists and the establishment have ever encountered. And Jimmy Dore will tell you, oh, no, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is. That's right. La Chupacabra. She's the one that will bring down the United States government. She might, but it would be by accident. It certainly wouldn't be because of her policies. Her policies are nothing but increased governmental power. You fools. I mean, it's just the classic socialist idea of Trump's Hitler. Give all your guns to Hitler. Or, you know, just it's just absurdity. The level of cognitive dissonance that they display. Utterly shocking. While saying that we have cognitive dissonance. Our line of reasoning at InfoWars and on the right and on the alt-right on this, you know, new wave, not the establishment neocon right, but, you know, the conspiracy right. Yeah. We're consistent, y'all. Our line of logic is flawless. It's taut. You aren't going to find kinks in our line like you do with the socialists. Now, we'll move on to some more, you know, national news here. I have so many clips to play. I don't want to keep y'all waiting and keep y'all ignorant of some of this, some of these videos that I have to present to you. So let's see. Where will we go next? Let's go to clip 13. This is just laying the groundwork and setting the scene for the debacle of the Covington boys. This is clip 13. Context matters. Compilation video exposes MSM hoax from InfoWars.
It's very fortuitous. Your timing comes right in the middle of this big hubbub about this Native American elder and this young boy with one of those stupid fucking red hats on.
Now to the outrage over a video showing an encounter between teenagers and a Native American veteran near the Lincoln Memorial.
Outrage is growing this afternoon over students who mocked a Native American Vietnam veteran.
A video that is causing outrage for so many.
A Kentucky Catholic high school is facing backlash after footage of students mocking a Native American elder appeared online.
The videos have drawn outrage from all corners.
Here's the video sparking outrage on social media.
Sparked outrage on social media.
A group of teenagers, many wearing Make America Great Again hats, were caught on video taunting a Native American Vietnam veteran.
We are hearing from a Native American elder and Vietnam War veteran speaking to CNN after a disturbing viral video shows a group of teens harassing and mocking him in the nation's capital.
A disturbing viral video shows a mob of teens in Make America Great Again hats harassing a Native American elder in Washington.
Ben Phillips describes the tense moments now being replayed over and over again online when a young man got right in his face. Watch. Nathan Phillips was beating his drum and singing an American Indian protest song.
When I was there and I was standing there and I seen that group of people in front of me and I seen the angry faces and all of that, I realized I had put myself in a really dangerous situation.
One young man is captured in a tense moment, now being replayed online, getting right in his face and mocking his singing and drumming on the day of the Indigenous People's March.
A moment from the march has gone viral, an interaction between Native marchers and a group of high school students.
Videos of the encounter shared widely on social media. Swift backlash against the behavior of those Kentucky teens.
You see a lot of red in this. You see a lot of the MAGA hats.
The smile on his face shows how little respect he had for what he was witnessing.
Clearly, these boys are not getting a good education because it makes little sense to angrily chant build the wall to a population with literally zero illegal immigrants who were here long before we were.
Hollywood film producer Jack Morrissey tweeted that he wanted the boys killed.
MAGA kids go screaming hat first into the woodchip.
I know this will come as a huge shock to all of you. This entire exchange was completely misrepresented in the media.
Leftist media, of course, claimed that these students were harassing this Native American Indian. Turns out it was exactly the opposite.
Here's what the mainstream media refused to tell you happened before the exchange.
Look at all these dusty-ass crackers with that racist garbage on. Look at these dirty-ass crackers.
Ain't gonna be no peace until blood is shed.
I get a little angry looking at this guy who's gone on CNN everywhere else and what a big victim he is when there he's with a group screaming, we're gonna kill you.
So the media ran a completely fake news story, which resulted in children being threatened with murder.
Today, the Catholic school at the center of that viral confrontation on Capitol Hill forced to close. Students now facing death threats, being smeared as racist over video of a clash with a Native American protester at the March for Life.
People are calling now for the students to be killed, their school to be burned down, then to be shot. Twitter's leaving it up. Agrees with it.
I heard them saying, build that wall, build that wall.
It makes little sense to angrily chant, build the wall.
None of that is true. We went through the entire video and did not hear a single student chanting, build that wall.
There is no evidence at all that anybody said, build a wall.
This is the anatomy of how the left always are professional victims.
The left-wing media is actually intending to incite violence, intending to incite a civil war, and is functioning, frankly, as enemy combatants in a civil war that they have already started.
And this is exactly how the propaganda works to brainwash its very minions.
This story is about the people in power protecting their power and justifying their power by destroying and mocking those who are weaker than they are.
Let's be honest, the witch hunt against this poor kid was driven almost exclusively by the fact that he represents everything leftists despise. White, straight, male, pro-life, Catholic, pro-Trump.
This is the environment we live in today, where leftist hacks engage in these guerrilla tactics.
And it reminds me, covering this stuff, this is exactly why I'm here today. Not even because of politics, quite frankly, but because of the fake news.
The fake news just went all in on this fake story, and it's having repercussions. There's stories out today on Drudge Report. Kentucky town reels from fallout over viral national mall face-off. Park Hills City Council member Wesley Dieters discovered the original video clips on social media, and she says, our children were used as pawns for an ulterior leftist agenda. The statement from the Covington Catholic School says, this is a very serious matter that has already permanently altered the lives of many people. It's important for us to gather the facts that will allow us to determine what corrective actions, if any, are appropriate. We've been so slammed with messages and threats, very serious threats of violence, that I don't know when we plan on reopening that school. And of course, Nick Sandman, the sort of the kid at the center of all this, was interviewed on the Today Show earlier this morning. And we are working on getting you the clips of that right now. Hopefully play that in the next segment. But how do you think the Twitterati responded to the idea that this completely innocent kid, this victim, in fact, of harassment, this victim of a smear job, this victim of threats and calls to violence from elites and celebrities and newspapers without recompense, without, you know, censorship from Twitter, without reaction from Twitter. How do you think they responded to this victim being given an interview on the Today Show? Well, by likening him to Dylann Roof, the murderer who murdered Black people because he was a racist, or Pepe the Frog, who they've somehow equivalated to swastika now. But this is what they're essentially calling him: Adam Lanza. They're calling him Adolf Hitler. And what did he do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He stood there and stood his ground and acted respectfully and didn't bow and scrape and genuflect in front of the Native American who was trying to intimidate him by bashing a drum in front of his face. According to the Twitterati, that makes you Dylann Roof. Sick. We'll be right back. Nick Sandman. Which, I'm telling you folks, we need that song. We need Enter the Sandman. We need Mr. Sandman. We need these. Put this in context. Have a little bit of celebration for the fact that we are so blessed at having such intelligent, thoughtful young men. Now, you have to, folks, you have to go read the article on Infowars.com, Twitterati slam Guthrie for interviewing Nick Sandman. Compare him to Adam Lanza, Dylann Roof, and Hitler. We'll go to some clips of that interview on the Today Show in just a minute here. And then in the 9:30 time slot, I will be joined by Eric Peters of epautos.com to talk about some of the technological advancements being made. But first, I want to go through this Twitterati madness, this utter derangement coming from the leftists. I'll just read some of these. Eric Garland, checkmark, blue checkmark, says, do you think Pepe the Frog is available for a Thursday show? Can Dylann Roof do a segment from prison, heart to heart with some fentanyl traffickers? Okay, so just quick reminder, these kids did nothing wrong. These kids are utterly innocent. These kids are, in fact, the victim of harassment and of just assaults, verbal and otherwise, and credible, massive deluge of threats against them, their family, their school, to the extent that the school had to shut down, surrounded by police officers. There are protesters gathering in their town now, all based on a lie, all based off of utter lies. Okay? This is the derangement that these people exist. I mean, the video's out there. This is utterly uncontestable. These boys acted in an unimpeachable manner. And yet this is the level of hate that these fools and these blue check marks continue to expound despite being completely wrong. They're so arrogant in their ignorance. It's astounding. Eric Garland also says, I have a segment idea for you, the human side of human traffickers. So there he's being compared to the racist murderer, Dylann Roof. He's being compared to fentanyl traffickers. He's being compared to human traffickers. Here he continues, oh, this could work for your show. Adam Lanza at the center of one of Connecticut's most controversial events. We do poetry readings from his private journal. Okay, so now he's Adam Lanza, murderer, deranged psychopath. Why? They have done nothing. These people are deranged. Amy Siskind, with a rainbow flag on her next to her blue check mark, says, if we can organize boycotting Trump's Oval Office address, we can certainly orchestrate a boycott of today's show. Yeah, how dare they try to get the side of the victim? How dare they allow the victim of this media circus storm of lies to try to correct the record? They should probably boycott that. Khashoggi's Ghost is the name of this person who says, you just permanently lost me as a viewer. All caps, you are taking the wrong side. Please look at all the evidence and then invite the real victim. The evidence clearly shows that this kid is the victim. These people are just, I mean, deranged is not a strong enough word for it. Bishop Talbert Swan, another blue check mark. None of these people have been kicked off or punished for the fake news that they're spreading. He says, please send me the link to the shows where you sat down with the parents of Laquan McDonald, Tamir Rice, and Trayvon Martin, and a host of other innocent black boys who were killed and had their reputations smeared by bigoted white people to justify their murders. What is he talking about? What the hell does that have to do with anything? Was he missing his eyes and ears at the time where all of these stories were plastered over all of the mainstream media constantly? And almost universally were portrayed incorrectly. Any time that they were brought on, talk about hands up, don't shoot, all lies, all incorrect. All of these were adjudicated by a jury of these people's peers and the police were found not guilty. I mean, but what does that have to do with anything? They just bring stuff up and just bring it in. It's like they're so pathologically obsessed with race. They're so mind controlled that that's all they can possibly think about. Then we have Tony Posnansky, who says, sounds awesome. Will you be digging up Hitler's corpse for a fun dialogue on Thursday? Okay, so now he's Hitler. Now he's Hitler. Now he's also apparently responsible for Trayvon Martin's death. He's Dylann Roof. He's Adam Lanza. I mean, they say this other guy, Pavlovitz, Another blue check mark saying you should be ashamed of yourself. Sarah Wood says, did you ask him about blackface at his school or the kid saying that rape is okay? Or did you focus on how being white and male will get him out of trouble? They're so obsessed with their identity politics. They're so brainwashed. They're so just utterly controlled. It's like they are zombies. These people are zombies. They say, oh, he's leaving his hat at home during his innocence tour, huh? Yeah, well, he's innocent. So, you know, I guess you can call it an innocence tour if you want, considering that, you know, he is innocent. But God forbid, I mean, apparently he's Hitler for what? For standing in a public place. Absurd. Tony Posnansky says, another blue check mark, says, thank you for this, Savannah. That kid, or shall I say young man, is a hero and an inspiration to all of us white MAGA hat people. Oh, white, they're just obsessed with white people. They're so scared of white people, says this theoretically white guy. And we will continue to wear our red hats and yell at other cultures because we are the MAGA hat generation. And Savannah, that kid is a hero. So sarcastically, you know, trying to portray Donald Trump supporters at yell at other cultures. What does that even mean? How do you yell at a culture? These people are just unbelievably stupid. Yelling at a culture. What? It's like, it doesn't, it's, you're yelling at a concept. Are you yelling at people from another culture? That would actually, you know, at least make grammatical sense. My God, this guy named Blue Wave Geek says, I hope you ask why his school buddies think that rape is okay. Yeah, they're rapists now, apparently. And why they're flashing white supremacy signs is okay. You know why they're saying that? Cat comes from a photo that some other Twitterati member posted of them going like this after scoring a three-pointer in basketball. You know, like basketball players do. So they take a picture of them celebrating a three-pointer and go, see, white supremacy. These boys are Hitler. These boys are Hitler. They are mass murderers. They are psychopaths. No, you people have something seriously wrong in your brain. Nathan Phillips, the fraud chief squatting bull, says that he's scolding the kids, and he says they need to be sentenced to some kind of sensitivity training or cultural education. That's right. That's right. This fake stolen valor veteran who claims to be an elder. Okay, so he's an old man. He's an old Indian man who comes up and bashes his drum in the face of some children. And then he says, you know, they need to be re-educated. They need to be sent to a re-education camp. Is the threat coming real? Oh, you got it. You found the song. My God, folks. What a world. These are the people that we're dealing with. These are the psychopaths that got blue check marks next to their names.
Keep on lying. Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. In the 10 o'clock hour, we'll get back into the talking about the Covington boys, and we'll show you some clips from their interview a little bit earlier today, that occurred a little bit earlier today. But right now, we're not talking about the present. We're not talking about the past. We're going into the future with Eric Peters. You can be followed on Twitter at LibertarianCarG. His website is epautos.com. Thank you so much for being on with me, Eric.
Oh, you bet, Harrison. Good to be here.
So your latest article is about Elon Musk and about the, I mean, it borders on fraud, what he's doing, promising one thing and not even delivering another, not delivering anything. But walk through for the people, what exactly is going on with Tesla and the Model 3 right now?
Yeah, it's really striking. I'm sure people who are listening can remember that for at least the past year plus, they've been hearing about the Model 3 is going to be the affordable electric car that's going to revolutionize electric cars. It's going to cost $35,000. The media touted that relentlessly, and there were stories everywhere about this. Well, as it turns out, Elon's not building that, even though he took deposits from lots of people as far back as 3 years ago to buy one of these things, but he can't produce them. So instead, he's selling a version of the Model 3 with a base price of $44,000, it actually transacts for closer to $60,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's the that's the affordable car. And at the same time, this was just a couple of weeks ago, he announced that he would no longer be selling the somewhat less pricey version of the Model S, which is the top of the line Tesla. Until a few weeks ago, you could buy one that stickered for about $73,000, but henceforth, you'll only be able to buy the one that starts at about $94,000.
Yeah, so you point out that Tesla's taken almost $1 billion from Model 3 prospects. You put
yep.
It buys a lot of cannolis.
It does.
That's an understatement. So how is this not fraud? I hesitate to make that accusation, but that's what it seems like to me. But how is he able to get away with this?
Yeah, well, what's particularly striking to me is the way that some other car companies, Volkswagen, for instance, have been crucified for delivering cars that people
right.
wanted that actually worked. And met the specifications as far as the customers were concerned over some pedantic so-called cheating on a government test. They had people frog march to jail for that. Right now, Nissan Renault head Carlos Ghosn is in the clink, not for any mismanagement of the company or defrauding of customers, but apparently because he was hiding some money that they were trying to pay him under the table. So, it's interesting that kind of thing goes viciously punished. But when it comes to Elon Musk, nothing happens. The guy's like untouchable.
Why is that? Do you have any speculations on that? Is this guy is he given a pass because of something he's doing that we don't know about? Or is it just the fact that the government's so obsessed about trying to get electric cars onto the road, they're willing to overlook this sort of malpractice?
Well, I think you just hit on it. I think that the true purpose of Tesla was to normalize and sex up electric cars. People out there will probably remember the times back in the 70s when electric cars were these ungainly little boxes and just very unappealing, in addition to having all the functional problems that they have today, including limited range and long recharge times. But in addition to that, they were ugly and slow. So somebody came up with this great idea. Let's make fast and sexy and gadget-laden electric cars, and that'll get people interested in them. And then if we keep pushing it and, like trying to inflate a tire with a hole in it, just keep pumping air into this thing, eventually we'll habituate people to it and normalize it and make it kind of inevitable and get the rest of the car industry on board. And I think that's what the true purpose of Tesla has always been.
Now, why would they want to do that? Because in addition to Tesla making, electric automobiles sexy and mainstream to a certain extent, they've also been on the forefront of the automated driving and the auto driving stuff. So just why would the government be interested in putting this kind of technology forward? And just before I let you answer, I do want to point out that I just personally find it so funny and ironic when people have electric cars. It's just out of sight, out of mind. For the vast majority of them, they're still being powered off coal. They're still being powered off fossil fuels. So why the obsession of this?
Well, I think it has to do with the long-term goal of reducing people's mobility. You hear that term mobility a lot. Well, the electric car is a way to reduce mobility. And it's also a way to get rid of the cars that do give us mobility, meaning the non-automated, non-electric, internal combustion-powered car. For many decades, they tried to use emissions. Then they tried to use scarcity about gas and oil, that we were about to run out. We've got to come up with an alternative. Well, the peak oil thing has proved to be an embarrassing fraud. We're literally swimming in oil. The United States is on the verge to be the world's largest producer of oil. And an exporter of oil within the next couple of years. So they no longer have that reason. So what are we going to do? We've got to come up with something. So then, of course, they came up with climate change and the electric car. That's the solution, even though, as you point out, it still produces emissions just elsewhere, not at the tailpipe.
Right. And then, of course, you have the nickel that they have to mine up and all of these heavy earth or heavy metals that they have to destroy the earth to get. It's a scam on so many different levels.
Yeah.
It's almost astonishing. And this was actually something that David Knight made me realize during a conversation we were having at some point, is that value of having a car, of being able to go wherever you want without permission, without somebody tracking where you're going, without with the electric plugs, how easy would it be for the government to you plug in your car and you get a little message like, oops, your credit score isn't high enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to charge your car anymore. You're not allowed to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
How easy is it for them to shut down protests by just not letting the public transportation get there? No one has cars. How are you going to gather to protest against your government if the government doesn't want you to. So can you talk a little bit more about just how the value of having personal vehicles in terms of just getting around, and why electric vehicles are such a threat to that?
Well, there's a couple of factors here. One is just the immediacy of the cars that we have. Right now, once we're done talking, I'm going to just jump in my car and go. I don't have to wait for it to recharge. I don't have to worry about, well, I can only travel 100 miles maybe, and I better not use the air conditioning or the heat. And then I have to think about, well, I've got to find a charger, and then I've got to sit at that charger for a minimum of 30 to 45 minutes to get a partial charge. In other words, it makes getting around a real hassle. And the second part of this that you touched on just a moment ago is that, with regard to Teslas at least, these vehicles are connected to the Tesla Hive Mind, and Tesla can simply send a signal to the car to alter its programming, to increase or decrease the range of its batteries, or to just simply turn the car off, and there's nothing that you can do about it.
Right, and then you add on top of that the automated driving technology, and, you know, it's totally possible that if you are somebody that they, you know, want to get their hands on and you know, want to bring in, you get in your car locks its doors and drives you to the police station where they're waiting for you. I mean, you, by getting in these highly technologically advanced cars, you're basically surrendering your, you know, freedom of movement over to the machines and whoever is in control of that, right?
Yeah, and you've also sacrificed something else, your property rights. You know, nominally, this is your car. You know, legally, you're buying it. Your name is on the title. You're making the payments. And yet, the car is controlled effectively, or could be, by this third party that you've paid to buy the car from, which is really an odd thing. And it's just baffles me that people aren't more uncomfortable with that.
Right. And now, of course, the term to sort of talk about this is the right to repair. And I've talked about this a little bit, but that is sort of key to me, is the right to repair. I mean, I think it started with John Deere tractors, where farmers would want to repair their tractors, and John Deere would come in and say, no, that's our tractor. You're just leasing it from us? How does that work?
Well, they actually get you to sign a licensing agreement at the time of purchase. And, of course, the vehicle, and this is, you know, a lot of people would be shocked to hear this, it's a tractor, it's a farm implement, but nonetheless, it's as computer-controlled as any car. The computer governs the operation of all of the vehicle systems, and those systems are locked out. You're sealed away from them. If you do not have the necessary diagnostic equipment and permissions to access it, you can't service the vehicle. So you're beholden to Deere. You have to, you know, basically take your hat off, put your tractor onto a trailer, and take it to the shop and beg them to fix it for you.
Right, and we're seeing this expand not just to cars, not just to equipment, but now, I mean, people don't even buy their own phones anymore. Now people are leasing phones. It's like they want to eliminate private property, and they're doing it through the sort of back door of eliminating the right to repair. We'll get more into this with Eric Peters on the other side. EP Autos is the website. Libertarian Car G is the Twitter to follow. More on the other side, climate change, etc. Don't go anywhere. Folks, my guest is Eric Peters. Find him at Libertarian Car G on Twitter, website EP Autos. Now, Eric, I want to lay something out for you. This is just sort of a common theme that I see, and I hope I can get your expertise on it, or at least maybe you can help me figure out what's going on here. Because I don't want to speak for both of us, but I'm not a Luddite. Right. I like technology.
Yep.
I want the we have a story here. Boeing's flying car is taking off. I want the flying cars. I want the moving sidewalks.
Yeah.
I want
the
clean air and all this stuff. Right. But what you have is people taking very real threats, in my opinion. I mean, we know the climate is changing. Whether or not it's man-made is up for debate. But we have, just from today, mass death of feral horses and a mass death of fruit bats in Australia from this unprecedented heat wave. To literally just killing, you know, herds of animals. It's so bad things are going on. But what happens is the globalists and the people who want power, they see these problems and they go, oh, we'll solve your problem for you. And instead of solving the problem, they use the mechanisms of power and the excuse that the problem gives them to destroy our freedom and you know, take over different areas of production like coal and like this sort of thing. To me, it's almost like an exterminator who you hire to kill the rats in your house, and you come home and your TV is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, what the heck? That exterminator is evil. And your friend goes, oh, what? You like the rats? You want the rats to be here? You go, no, it's not that.
I'm with you. I'm not a Luddite either. I like hot and cold running water. I like electricity. I like technology. It's a tool. You know, it's neither good nor bad. It's a tool, and a tool can be misused, very much like a gun can be misused. It's not that the gun is evil. It's a question of the person who uses it for evil being evil. And really, that's what we're talking about here, I think. It's the misuse of technology, and it's the misrepresentation of technology. Again, to get back to the electric car thing, it's presented as, well, oh, this is, you know, it's going to be a great mobility enhancer, but they do not talk about the fact that it's actually going to reduce people's mobility as well as make it more expensive. And those are facts.
And make people dependent on the system and on the grid. I mean, sure. If the grid goes down, you can't charge your electric car. I still have gallons of gasoline in my house, my basement or in my garage that I can fill up my car and get moving. You can't do that with the electric vehicle. So how do we balance that where we're trying to move forward into the future? We're trying to take advantage of these wonderful, amazing technological gifts. But at the same time, these gifts are being used against us. Well, how do we find that balance?
I think it's because the problem that we've got is that it's being forced on us from the top down. This is not being presented to us as, hey, look at this neat alternative. This is a better alternative. And if, in fact, it were a better alternative, people would say, you know what? Yup, it is. It's cheaper. It's more efficient. It's cool. I'm going to buy that because it makes more sense to me. Instead, it's being thrust upon us. It's being forced upon us. I have nothing against electric cars. You know, I get this all the time. Oh, you just hate electric cars. No, I don't. I hate mandates and subsidies and government boondoggles. That's really the problem here, not the electric car per se.
Yeah, and there's so many examples of this just in the governmental system that we're under. I mean, climate change, you've seen the Green New Deal that they're pushing that just basically just comes out and says, hey, you know, we're going to say that we're dealing with climate change, but really we're shoving in socialism, full-bore socialism. You see it with the EPA where they're like, oh, we're going to help you clean up your air, but really we're going in and shutting down, you know, coal plants and people that we don't like. And it's the misuse of power that makes me so mad. I'm for the EPA. I'm against the people who are abusing the power of the EPA, you know, unconstitutionally going beyond their permit or remit and abusing the people with this power.
Well, sure.
So
and on my end
it transcends,
of things,
you know, technology.
On my end of things, you know, I'm angry and frustrated by people on my side of the aisle, journalists who have really done a poor, if not negligent, job of explaining these issues to people. For example, the fact that take any new car today, any new car, IC car, not an electric car, and its emissions are effectively nil. And this is not presented to people. Almost all new cars now, IC cars, meet the EPA's own PZEV, Partial Zero Emissions Vehicle Standard, and they emit something like 90, 97, 98% of what comes out of the tailpipe is environmentally harmless. So then you'll hear a news story talking about how the next mandate or regulation is going to cut tailpipe emissions by 20%, which is technically true, but what they don't tell you is that it's 20% of 0.5%.
Right.
So, you know, the problem with cars has been solved. You know, if you look at the major cities today, you do not have the smog issue that existed in the 70s and the 60s. That's been handled. You know, now we've got this phenomenal technology, this very efficient technology, and now it's being destroyed for the sake of a less efficient and in many, you know, according to a lot of the things that I've read, an environmentally less friendly alternative, these electric cars. If you look at it in the totality, not the, you know, the emissions that the car produces when you drive it, which is not much, but as we were talking about earlier, the environmental impact of utility plants, they're going to have to build more to service these cars. The stuff that comes out of the smokestacks, the volume of it is greater in the aggregate than what would come out of the fleet of electric cars that would be out there. And then you've got the disposal issue and the recycling issue. Each electric car has several hundred pounds of extremely toxic materials in it. You know, and this stuff is just not being explained to people.
Yeah, and I think it is all about, you know, informing people. If people are informed, if they're able to make well-informed decisions, they typically, in my opinion, they make the right ones. It's only when they hide things or confuse things or disseminate false information that people are led to act in a way that is, you know, actually harmful to themselves. And we just have to look at, you know, Davos right now. The elites are meeting in Switzerland. 1,500 private jets go to Switzerland so they can get together and tell us that we need to stop driving our cars. Mm-hmm. It's totally absurd, and they're using it as a lever of power. It's what the Yellow Vest protest really
started out. Which isn't being reported in this country. It's interesting. There's been a virtual news blackout on the Yellow Vest thing.
Oh, yeah. totally. I mean, except for InfoWars and, you know, a few other people, it's impossible to find. But this is what it's all about. And, you know, one of the to me, hilarious and just strange ironies of the whole situation is that there are studies that have come out and say, you know, something like just 100 ships, you know, the 100 biggest, you know, vessels moving across the ocean produce as much pollution as every car on Earth combined. Yet here are these people telling us, oh, we need to globalize. We need to send, you know, we need to raise chickens here, send them to China, have them processed and sent back. You know, the pollution, created by this globalist market that they're trying to enforce or trying to get everybody to play into is so destructive. And people see this and they go, but wait, you're telling me I have to stop driving when you're supporting these incredibly destructive things? I think people are waking up to it.
Well, I hope so. You notice that there's never any energy austerity applied to the elites. They themselves,
of course.
Exactly, aren't made to conserve. And to get back to electric cars, I think this is an important point that I wanted to make. The government's interference in the electric car market has created a very perverse thing. Electric cars that emphasize speed, quickness, high performance, and all these other attributes that have absolutely nothing to do with saving people money and reducing the cost of transportation, leaving aside all of these other issues. What rational person who's trying to reduce the cost of driving is going to spend, let's say, $30,000, which is the cost of a Nissan Leaf, which is the least expensive electric car you can buy, when you could go out and spend $14,000 on an equivalent Versa powered by an internal combustion engine and just pocket the $15,000?
Right. Well, so. Is this just a psyop that they're just trying to make it seem sexy and cool and it's all just about appearances to try to overcome people's logical or rational understanding of the situation?
Yeah, it has to be. It's the only thing that makes any sense to me. You know, electric cars have been around for a long time, and I've been covering the car industry since the 90s. And Tesla changed the game by making electric cars seem sexy and attractive on levels other than economics and efficiency. And I think that there was a reason for that. It belies the purpose. If we're going to have something that's non-traditional, that's different from an internal combustion-powered car, shouldn't it be more efficient, more economical, a better way to get around? If it's all about speed and performance, well, let's give everybody a nice big government check and let them go out and buy a 911 Porsche. I'd like to have one.
Right? No, but you're so right, and you illustrate it so perfectly. Like it just came to me. We've known that they've had electric, you know, powered vehicles. They had a hemp-powered vehicle in like 1902 or something. They've had this forever, but they hold on to this technology until they find they can release it in a way that benefits them. It's so evil and so backwards the way that they allow this to come out. Last minute here, final words from Eric Peters.
Well, you know, I'd like to see just more in-depth reporting and coverage of the facts of this issue so that people could really understand it instead of the, in my opinion, deliberately deceptive propaganda that's being used to herd people into an alternative that is inferior to the ones that we have right now.
It's all about education. It's all about getting that information out there. Eric Peters is doing his part. You can follow him on Twitter at LibertarianCarG. His website, epautos.com. Thank you so much for being with us, Eric.
Thanks, Harrison. Appreciate it.
Great stuff. Powerful stuff, folks. It's been 2 hours. I haven't plugged a single time. Turbo Force, ladies and gentlemen, is now on the InfoWars store. This is the replacement to the sugar-heavy sodas, to the high-caffeine coffees, to the energy drinks that rot you from the inside out. This is long-lasting, even, cool energy that will keep you going all day. Turbo Force, InfoWarsStore.com. Help support this broadcast.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the David Knight Show on this Wednesday, the 23rd of January, 2019. We are wielding our First Amendment like a blazing sword to cut down the lies, misinformation, disinformation coming from the mainstream media one day closer to victory. As always. Now, I'm going to go to this video by our very own Greg Reese that breaks down the Covington boys and just the level of vitriol and violence and threats that they're facing. And the next segment, we will be going to the clips from Nick Sandman's interview earlier today on the Today Show. And then in the 10:30 time slot, I will be joined by Alex Newman. Another great conversation coming up for you in the second half of this hour. But first, Greg Reese, high school children targeted for violence by weaponized fake news media. Let's go to that.
A group of young students from Covington Catholic High School were in Washington, D.C. on a field trip. A group known as the Black Israelites began shouting at the young high school students, calling them incest babies, dogs, and crackers.
I see you. You want to wave high? A bunch of incest babies. A bunch of babies made out of incest.
They even wished death upon their parents.
May the Lord strike your mother and your father down. I wish I knew the curse of the evil.
The young students responded by turning away from the verbal attack and engaging in spirited school cheers.
Goddamn dog, get rid of your lice.
Y'all sound like a bunch of dogs.
That's right.
A bunch of hyenas. Yeah, a bunch of dogs. A bunch of hyenas.
So far, a normal day in America's diverse capital. But then, a group of Native Americans who were in the area protesting approached the group of children.
That's right. Here come Gad. Here come Gad. Here come Gad. Look at our Make America Great Again hats.
Elderly Native American Nathan Phillips walked right up to young student Nick Sandman and began beating a drum in his face for several minutes, making him understandably uncomfortable. Grown adults can be heard telling the young white children to go back to Europe. Out of all this, the mainstream media created a fictional narrative that claimed the students provoked the entire ordeal. They claim the young students approached the Native American with hostility and racial hatred, when in fact, the full video shows exactly the opposite. As a result of this lie, the unhinged American left began spewing calls for violence on social media. They even called for the murder of the entire school. The mainstream media is not only lying, they are now targeting young, innocent American lives. They are not only creating false narratives, but they are fomenting violence. They are using their powerful platforms to not only betray the public's trust, but to weaponize us against each other. These crimes are most serious, and one can only hope that justice makes a long stop in America. This is Greg Reese for Infowars.com.
Powerful, powerful report from Greg Reese that you can find on Infowars.com. It's titled High School Children Targeted for Violence by Weaponized Fake News Media. You know, I understand that it can kind of get exhausting going over these same facts over and over because, I mean, they're so clear to us. We know them so well. But it's important to go back over them from the beginning to put the whole thing in perspective because then you see the vitriol and the anger and the threats and the way that the people in the media and blue check marks are calling these boys Hitler, calling them Dylan Roof. We need to go back to the beginning and look at it from the bird's eye view. We must fly above the whole situation and look down and see it all so we can understand it fully. Today on the Today Show, Nick Sandman, the sort of the kid at the center of this Covington Catholic debacle, was interviewed, and we will go to some of these clips right now. First, this is the sort of the recap of the whole thing. And I say once again, we need to understand this from beginning to end because we need to be able to put into context exactly why these people that are showing such hatred for these kids. We need to show just how wrong they are. So let's get the recap from this interview on the Today Show. Let's play that now.
Nick Sandman, a Kentucky student at the center of that viral video, says he wasn't disrespectful when he appeared to confront Native American veteran Nathan Phillips. He sat down exclusively with today's Savannah Guthrie.
Do you feel that you owe anybody an apology? Do you see your own fault in any way?
As far as standing there, I had every right to do so.
You're damn right you do.
My position is that I was not disrespectful to Mr. Phillips. I respect him. I'd like to talk to him. I mean, in hindsight, I wish we could have walked away and avoided the whole thing.
The Covington Catholic High School students, some wearing Make America Great Again hats, were in D.C. last week for the March for Life.
I was afraid. I felt threatened. Because when we were there, and we were in front of them, they surrounded us. Such a
but after more videos emerged, defenders of the students say there was a rush to judgment.
Do you think the students did anything wrong?
Nope.
A student whose parents didn't want his face shown told NBC affiliate WLWT his classmates were using their school chants, approved by chaperones, to drown out insults from another group of protesters, men identified as Black Hebrew Israelites.
Insane racist.
But the chants continued when Phillips entered the picture, saying he was trying to intervene.
There was three Native American people there. One of them was jumping up and down, so our guys start jumping up and down, clapping. We're dancing with him.
School chants.
They're having a great time.
To be in school. And this wasn't school.
Today, Native Americans protested in Covington, and even President Trump weighed in, calling the students symbols of fake news and how evil it can be. But Phillips says the students should accept responsibility for their actions.
The students should go through some kind of sensitivity training, cultural education.
We should send them to a re-education camp where
police
we can
here
beat
are on
them
high alert after
they
receiving
think
threats
right.
against the students. The diocese had initially said they could face expulsion. Now it says a third-party investigation will begin this week.
My God, ladies and gentlemen, I love that response where everyone's like, Are you going to make an apology? Do you think you did anything wrong? And he's like, well, I was just standing there. So no. So awesome. Let's go to that. Let's go to that clip again. Hear his full answer about standing his ground.
You owe anybody an apology? Do you see your own fault in any way?
As far as standing there, I had every right to do so. My position is that I was not disrespectful to Mr. Phillips. I respect him. I'd like to talk to him. I mean, in hindsight, I wish we could have walked away and avoided the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
But I can't say that I'm sorry for listening to him and standing there.
This kid is awesome. This kid is so cool. So calm, so collected, so respectful. Like, to a fault. Respectful. Here's a guy who came up to him, tried to, like, you know, impose his will on him, tried to get him to be scared, kind of. I mean, has been the reason this guy, you know, Nathan Phillips, this guy's lies, utter blatant disregard for the truth and outright lies has caused this kid untold threats and, you know, mental anguish and having, you know, his whole life looked into, people publishing like his school records. I mean, this guy, Nathan Phillips, such a dirtbag. I mean, I even have a story of him. He goes in and tries to break up a Catholic mass by drumming and storming into a church to break it up. He's like, shouldn't they be in school? This is not school. He's just, you dirtbag. You jerk. He's a leftist. Activist, like professional activist. This is what he does. So this guy ruins these kids' lives, potentially. I mean, at least for the short term. And, you know, for a long time, there's so many dumb people willing to believe the crap, even though it's been debunked, even though it's been shown beyond a shadow of a doubt that this man is a liar, chief squatting bull or chief spreading bull. I haven't decided which one I think is funnier, but this guy, such a dirtbag, his lies have affected this kid so dramatically. And this kid's like, I'd like to talk to him. I respect him. He's so nice. I would not be that nice. I would not be saying this thing that this kid said. And I understand that so much trouble has been whipped up because of this, that he's like, man, you know, if I knew what was going to happen, I would have just walked away. I will say from the bottom of my heart, Nick Sandman, I'm so glad that you did not walk away and that you stood your ground and that you remained strong in the face of this overwhelming bullcrap. Now let's go to this next clip where they're talking about his smirk. And keep in mind that 1984 predicted this perfectly. They called it a face crime, where making an incorrect facial expression is equivalent of being a traitor or showing hate. This is the world that we're now in. You cannot be white and smirk. First, this was a white supremacist symbol. Now, the very act of smirking triggers the left. Let's go to that video.
The center of the firestorm, what critics characterize as a smirk on Sandman's face. Some saying it was an attempt to stare down
smirk.
Phillips. What do you think that looks like?
I see it as a smile saying that this is the best you're going to get out of me. You won't get any further reaction of aggression. And I'm willing to stand here as long as you want to hit this drum in my face.
What some people see is a young kid with a smirk on his face.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say for people who see that and are making a judgment about who you are?
Well, people have judged me based off one expression, which I wasn't smirking, but people have assumed that's what I have. And they've gone from there to titling me and labeling me as a racist person, someone that's disrespectful to adults, which they've had to assume so many things to get there without consulting anyone that can give them the opposite story.
There's one word that comes to mind when I see his response, Nick Sandman's response, and it's the word meek. There's the racist 3-point sign that that scares the crap out of the blue check marks. But the word meek comes to mind, and people misconstrue the word meek. They think it means weak. They think it means easily imposed upon. Because you hear things like the meek shall inherit the earth. But meek in that context, I would put to the first definition you find on Merriam-Webster, which is enduring injury with patience and without resentment. Not violent or strong. There's other definitions that say deficient in spirit and courage. This kid is clearly not deficient in spirit and courage, but he has been able to endure injury with patience and without resentment. See, there's the more common definition that I disagree with. It says quiet, gentle, and easily imposed upon or submissive. Okay, clearly this kid was not submissive. He was not easily imposed upon. But he was meek in the sense that he was enduring this injury, is continuing to endure this injury with patience and without resentment. That is the spirit of Christ. That is the spirit of godliness and righteousness that this kid so adequately embodies. And, you know, there's that line from Dark Knight. He's not the hero we need, or he's not the hero we wanted, but he's the one we need right now, or whatever it is. It's like this kid would have never sought out the spotlight. He would have never, you know, demanded to be the head of this movement or anything. And that's the exact reason why he's so appropriately placed as a face of this movement of Americans who are constantly being spat on, constantly being insulted, and bearing it with such meek and stoic resolve. He's a hero. All right, folks. I will be joined in the next segment and for the remainder of the show by Alex Newman. I'm very excited to talk to him about his latest article about NATO and the New World Order and Germany and France working together. We'll get back into that with him. So before I do that, I want to just blow through some of these articles that you can find at Infowars.com and elsewhere, just to give you a quick layout of the stuff that I haven't quite gotten to today. Now, very important stuff, World War III level important stuff with the rapid military escalation between Iran and Israel. I'll be covering that more tomorrow, but just know that they are bombing each other and getting very, very close to squaring off in that part of the world, which of course will rapidly domino effect out to the rest of the world, primarily America. And we'll see exactly where that goes. But that's very important, as well as the opposition launching protests to oust Maduro as U.S.-Venezuela tensions rise. These are both major international, you know, ground shifts going on that we will need to cover more in depth in the next few days. Supreme Court is hearing a rare Second Amendment case. That story is by Kit Daniels. You can find on Infowars.com. Of course, coincides with the Breitbart article, Disarm America Movement is Gunning for Your Second Amendment Rights. Yes, folks, the Democrats, the progressives are wasting no time in trying to strip you of your constitutionally guaranteed rights. Now, China, this is amazing. China has launched an app that tells you if you are within 500 yards of someone in debt. So it'll give you an alert. Bing! You are within 500 yards of somebody who is in debt. And then if you see them, I don't know, spending money, you're supposed to report them and say, oh, this person could pay their debt back, but they're not. So I will report them and I will get a bonus in my social score. And they'll go down on their social score. Just what's going on in China. In fact, let's go to this video, y'all. We can just roll it as B-roll. It's facial recognition where as soon as you're walking into college, it's how they're taking attendance now in China. There you can see it if you're a TV viewer. As you walk into the class, your face is plastered on the screen. And here's what you have to understand about facial recognition technology is they could easily implement this secretly. They could easily be taking these photos and, you know, identifying who people are secretly, but they have it plastered on a giant screen TV for everyone to see because it's not nearly as effective at keeping down a populace if they don't know it's happening. If you put it in their face and you say, we are watching you, we are observing you, we are reading your face and documenting everything you do, well, you don't need to subjugate them. People will subjugate themselves. It's a psychological trick and it's sick. And China is really the blueprint for what the New World Order wants the entire world to be. Now we have Kamala Harris again running for president. She has apparently stocked her entire campaign, you know, just all the people from her campaign, I should say, are basically holdovers from Hillary. So she is the establishment choice as of yet. Of course, I'm still not totally sure that Hillary Clinton will not be running. So we'll see how that goes. This article came out and I haven't had a chance to read through it. So I didn't want to dive into it without doing the due diligence. So I'll get into this as well tomorrow. This is the secret list of Pentagon research papers that was released with just insane things like pulsed high-power microwave technology, advanced nuclear propulsion for manned deep space missions, biosensors and bio-EMS, invisibility cloaking, traversing wormholes, stargates, and negative energy, high-frequency gravitational wave communications, role of superconductors in gravity research. I mean, really insane stuff is purportedly coming out. I will look more into that and give you that full story tomorrow or the day after, hopefully tomorrow. If you're looking to find it, just search UFOs, warp drives, stargates, freedom of information query, reveal secret list of Pentagon research papers. We will be getting into that very soon. Alexandria Chupacabra Cortez wins a seat on the powerful House Oversight Committee. So yes, despite just embarrassing herself day after day, every single time she appears on television, she says something more ridiculous and childish. But does it surprise you that 74% of Democrats say they would vote for her for president? 74%. Yeah, that's that 74% that's still calling the undeniably innocent boys of Covington Catholic High School. They're still calling him Hitler or Dylan Roof. So it just, you know, is it surprising that people with such a low level of cognitive ability would vote for the socialist middle schooler for president? Here's a just fascinating number. And I'm going to get you to guess, and you'll never guess what the number is. This is from a very in-depth, a thick survey here. source and use of firearms involved in crimes, survey of prison inmates from 2016. This is of all criminals, but specifically as well, people who possessed firearms or who committed crimes with firearms. Guess how many of them obtained a gun legally? Guess how many of these gun purchases would have been affected by gun control? 1.3%. That's one of the highlights. About 1.3% of prisoners obtained a gun from a retail source and used it in their offense. So 98.7% of guns being used criminally were purchased criminally, were purchased illegally, would not be stopped by any sort of gun control measures that socialists and the treasonous actors in our government would care to enact. Some other stuff here. So Congress is, of course, voting now on dueling, is what they're calling it, dueling votes to try to get this budget passed and get the shutdown ended as it goes into, or as it goes out of, its fifth week. Shutdown votes on shutdown votes set up political test for the Senate. So we'll see how that goes. These dueling proposals to reopen shuttered federal agencies. We'll see how that goes. In the meantime, there are congressmen on the Democrat side, specifically this Congressman Peterson, says Democrats should just, quote, give Trump the money for the border wall. He said, I'd give him the whole thing. He said, put strings on it so you make sure the wall is where you want it to be. But he says, why are we fighting over this? We're going to build the wall anyway at some time. So Democrats showing signs of cracking, unlike the Republicans who remain stalwart behind their president. But yes, Congress is agitating to end the relentless shutdown. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi continues to have a hissy fit, wet her diaper, and refuse to allow White House officials access to the House floor for the State of the Union walkthrough. She's like, no, you can't come. It's not safe. And they're like, all right, well, we'd like to do a walkthrough, you know, for safety. And she's like, no, you can't. You can't do a walkthrough for safety. It's not safe enough. She is a child who is trying to play Donald Trump's game and showing just why Donald Trump is so special. And then Google Schmidt is going to lead a government AI group. Oh, good. Oh, good. Google is now just outright partnering up with the government of the United States. They've been that way forever. Now they're just doing it out in the open. These stories and more at InfoWars.com. InfoWarsStore.com is where you go to support this broadcast and everything we do here at InfoWars. Get your Turbo Force right now. It's out and it's 33% off and it's delicious and it'll give you energy.
The mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Do you remember, ladies and gentlemen, do you remember, are you able to think this far back? I want you to cast your memory back through the fogs of ages to, oh, a year and a half ago, when things like the New World Order, things like the EU Army, were the realm of conspiracy theory and insane tinfoil hat, you know, nonsense. Do you remember when that was the case? And what has happened over the last year and a half that has caused the global elite and the New World Order itself to just come out and say, yeah, that's what we're doing. You were right all along. Only now opposing it is going to be a crime. This is the world that we're dealing with. And I am joined for the next half hour by Alex Newman, whose most recent article, German Defense Chief Unleash NATO on Opponents of the World Order, lays out in just bare truth and in some ways just a whirlwind and a cacophony of insanity, the way that they present one thing and then use that to act like it's something else. I mean, it's an amazing article. And I want to thank Alex so much for joining me here on the David Knight Show. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, Harrison, thank you so much. It's great to be with you and thank you for the kind introduction.
Absolutely. I asked the crew to get me your latest article just so I could have it in front of me. And I'm like, I'm just like, yes, this is amazing. I mean, the whole thing, I would just read it all verbatim if I could. And I suggest everybody goes to thenewamerican.com, follows Alex Newman underscore J-O-U on Twitter. And I want to get your comments on this, but basically you have this German defense minister saying that NATO needs to be used against opponents of the rules-based international order, a.k.a. the New World Order. He says, most of all, it will send a clear message to those opposing the rules-based international order. We transatlantic allies are ready and willing to defend our soil, our people, and our freedom. See how they couch their destructive and just, you know, New World Order plan in the words of freedom and soil and people. This is just a great article. Just give to me, I guess, the summation of this article and of what's going on right now.
Yeah, well, thank you, Harrison, for the opportunity. And you know, somebody within the UN actually sent me this op-ed. I don't normally make a habit of reading the New York Times, but somebody from within the UN, a source that I rely on for getting information, said, you need to read this. So I opened it up and, oh my goodness, she's saying we're going to use NATO against opponents of the New World Order. And, you know, then she counters that. She says, well, you know, by opponents of the New World Order, we're talking about communist China and ISIS. And of course, that is a total fraud, as regular readers of InfoWars or The New American know very well. You know, our dear president was very clear and very correct when he said that Obama and Hillary were co-founders of ISIS. You know, we have smoking gun documents proving that. So clearly, and, you know, it was NATO governments that did this. It was the French government, the UK government, the Turkish government, the Obama administration. So nobody with two brain cells to rub together really thinks NATO is to fight against ISIS or communist China. You know, from the very beginning, the globalist elites have been supporting, aiding and abetting the rise of communist China. David Rockefeller bragged about it in the New York Times, that George Soros still runs around the world saying communist China should own the New World Order. So right. What's going on? And, you know, they say they're going to use NATO to defend our freedom, our soil, and our people. And that's also ludicrous. Anybody who knows anything about what the German government has done over the last few years knows that they've invited millions of Islamists in from the Middle East and North Africa. If you wanted to defend your people and your soil, you would have an actual border. And you would say that immigrants and, you know, other people need to come through in a legal, orderly, correct way. So, you know, it's, I think, a brazen admission that the purpose of NATO is and has been all along. Actually, we have a lot of evidence for this, that it is and always has been the military force for the New World Order.
Right. And, you know, I have to laugh because it's just so absurd. It's like laughing is the only response I can come up with. But it really is a dangerous threat. It really is something that, like, we need to really be worried about. You put it so well here, and I'll just read this this paragraph here from your article, because you point out that the reason they're saying that they're doing this is, well, we got to fight the Islamic State, as you point out. Totally ridiculous. They started the Islamic State. We have to stop these mass murdering communist Chinese. Okay, well, you're the ones that gave them the technology to do that, everywhere from David Rockefeller to the Clintons. I mean, we know this. And of course, the government of Russia's Vladimir Putin. These are the boogeymen that they're putting up, you know, to scare us into giving over control. But here you say, quote, in other words, if you oppose the globalist vision of a, quote, rules-based international order controlled by the globalist elite, complete with the destruction of self-government, individual liberty, and Western Christian civilization, you are the enemy. And you're probably a Russian-backed Islamic terrorist authoritarian of some sort, because who else would oppose the glorious New World Order of technocracy, open borders, and big government? It's so accurate and so right. And you see the way that China is coming out with these facial recognition programs and all this sort of stuff. They are paving the way for that to be the whole world over. And they're telling you, you're on the side of the Chinese if you try to stop it. Wow.
It really is wild. You know, I'm all in favor of looking into who within the Western world has been supporting and aiding the rise of the communist Chinese. In fact, one of the people I quote in my article is the former boss of NATO, Javier Solana, a socialist and a globalist from Spain, who says, hey, we need to invite the communist Chinese to help us run the New World Order, right? I mean, they deserve more power within the New World Order and the architecture of global governance. And so we should give them that. We shouldn't be worried about it. So here you have the actual former head of NATO saying, we want the communist Chinese running the New World Order. You know, right now, the World Economic Forum is going on in Davos. Well, you know, just last year, you had the mass murdering dictator of communist China there, and all the globalists in the world were, you know, bowing down, hailing to the new chief of globalism. So they really think that people are stupid. And you know, some certainly are. They've been indoctrinated by the government. They've been misled by fake news media. But the truth is, I think there's enough smart people to recognize this. And I think they're panicking right now. I think the fact that we have a PR campaign to build up public support for NATO tells me that they're really worried that Trump may be serious about blowing up this whole machine. And, you know, that would be the right thing to do. And I think that's why we're seeing now this kind of full-blown PR campaign with op-eds in the New York Times and slick, you know, marketing materials. It's such an interesting time, Harrison.
Yeah. And, you know, you say that they, you know, people are dumb and they'll fall for it. Then what you have to realize is the people implementing this are the ones who are responsible for putting the chemicals in the water and the fluoride and all that. Like, they've been actively dumbing us down. They thought they'd gotten us to a point that we were just that dumb. And what they're finding with Trump and the support that he is receiving, that they didn't finish the job. They left us just intelligent enough that we can see what they're doing and fight back against it. And it's threatening to bring down their entire corrupt establishment. Now, I want to ask you about France and Germany getting together and saying we need an EU army because NATO's not enough, and how that corresponds to them wanting to use NATO itself to come back. But just it just illustrates excellently what you point out in your article and what goes on constantly, as you have earlier this year, I believe it was, or I guess last year, it would have been Merkel coming together and saying, hey, nations need to give up their sovereignty. Well, then yesterday she says we need to do more to work together, including through military force in case of an attack on our sovereignty. It's like they're so brazen. They say one thing one day and one thing the next. It doesn't matter to them. They just want power, and they'll say whatever they need to achieve it, you know?
Absolutely. And you opened it, this segment so well when you talked about, you know, just a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, it was the stuff of kooky conspiracy theories to talk about the EU wanting to build up a military. And now this defense minister from Germany, Ursula von der Leyen, is openly saying, oh, by the way, we're building up an EU military, and this is going to be a nice complement for NATO so that we can use military force to defend the world order and defend against enemies of the world order, which, you know, she doesn't say it directly, but very clearly, I think she's talking about Trump and the many Americans who supported him. So I think what's going on with the globalists now is they always like to have a plan A, B, C, and D. And, you know, they've used NATO for so long as kind of the armed wing of the New World Order. You know, I think Libya was a really good example. And the irony here, you know, they say, oh, we're going to defend against China and Russia using NATO. Well, Russia and China just voted to use NATO to overthrow the Libyan government, right? We had a UN resolution in 2011 purporting to authorize the use of military force against Libya. And Russia and China both had to support that resolution. Otherwise, it wouldn't have passed because, you know, in the Security Council, all these governments have a veto power.
Incredible stuff. We got to go to break. More on the other side, folks. Don't go anywhere. Final segment of the David Knight Show. It is I, Harrison Smith, sitting in for David Knight, my guest for the remainder of the show, Alex Neumann. Follow him on Twitter at @AlexNeumann_JOU. His website is thenewamerican.com. We're talking about the lengths that the globalists are going to try to crush this rising tide of nationalism, populism, individuality that is bubbling up all over the globe. You know, Alex, last segment you mentioned that this is all sort of in response to the election of Donald Trump and the threat he poses to the New World Order, the way he's, bringing NATO back under control in a way and stopping them from being so outrageous and doing all these other things. But in addition to Trump, you have the Yellow Vest movement, you have Brexit in the UK, you have Salvini in Italy partnering up with Poland. I mean, this is a groundswell across the entire world. And yeah, it's got the globalists freaked out. But what is your what is your prediction in the short term as to how this is going to shake out with this massive, pretty much unified movement against the globalists? How do you think this is going to play out?
Yeah, Harrison, you're so right about what's happening. You know, I was just in Budapest interviewing the Secretary of State there for the Viktor Orban government. And you have literally senior people within the EU, people like Guy Verhofstadt, talking about we should have a military intervention in Hungary because the Hungarian government opposes more EU power grabs, opposes mass migration, opposes globalism, and supports the preservation of Christian civilization as it has existed in the Western world now for 2,000 years almost. So they are, I think, in a panic right now. And who's going to win, I think, is an open question. I think Donald Trump has really given courage to a lot of people who were kind of thinking these things, but were maybe a little bit too scared to go do it. The immigration compact of the United Nations that was signed in Morocco in December was a really good example. You know, first, it was just Donald Trump saying, well, we're not going to participate. Then Viktor Orban's government in Hungary said, well, we're not either. And then it was just like dominoes. You know, you had Croatia, yeah. Switzerland, Italy, Austria, Australia, Israel, Chile, now Brazil. You just had government after government saying we're not going to participate either. So there is this kind of bold wave of courage and resistance to the New World Order agenda that's flaring up now. But at the same time, the globalists are getting much more bold. So I think what this tells me is we're coming down to the wire. You know, the globalists recognize that if they allow this to go on for too much longer, millions more people will wake up and their job becomes much more difficult. So I think we're in a dangerous time. And I wouldn't put it past the globalists to do something outrageous, ridiculous, cause some sort of crisis. And I think we're in a dangerous time. So I just hope, you know, more people will watch the show, read The New American, get educated, get this information to other people. Because if we have a population that is educated enough, we can resist this. If we don't, it'll be easy to stampede us into false solutions. So that's where I think we are right now, Harrison.
I totally agree 100%. And I think that you see, you know, the way I've sort of interpreted it is that for so long, for decades almost, they had such control over the media, they had such control over the levers of power that they were more or less unopposed. I mean, you had one crazy guy in Austin, Texas, yelling about what was going on. You had you over there at the New American, knowing what's going on. But other than that, they had a pretty much a stranglehold on it. Donald Trump, Brexit, these things put a obstacle in their way, and they had two choices. They could either sort of pull back a little bit and go, no, we're not trying to do that, and kind of, you know, lay low for a second and try to resurge a little bit later. But they went the other route. They went, okay, now we got to go full bore. Now we got to take the mask off and just go 100%. And it's like the tighter they squeeze, the more we slip through their fingers. It's a failing ideology built on hubris, built on the idea that they thought that we were done. They thought that we were bad. And now you have humanity rising, humanity marching forth once again. So I got to laugh because as crazy as it is, the stuff that they're doing, as dangerous as it is, the precipice that we're approaching, I have to laugh because we have them on the run. This is a sign of their losing. So I'm happy when I see them doing this type of stuff because I don't think it'll last. What about you?
I agree completely. In fact, we have, you know, it was easy for us to despair some years ago. You know, here we are trying to tell the truth and nobody cares. People are glued to their fake media. And, you know, what are we going to do? But I think all along, people on our side underestimated the power that we have. And that is the truth. Yes, you know, they have billions and trillions of dollars and they can print money with their central banks and they can spread lies on CNN and the Washington Compost and the New York Slimes and even the controlled opposition like Fox News. But they don't have the truth. So selling lies and marketing lies is really, really expensive. And the truth is not all that hard to market. You know, people want the truth. There's a desire for it. So people come looking for it. So, you know, I'm optimistic, too. I think there's a lot of good things happening. But, you know, I hope people out there will not think that we can just, you know, coast and let good things happen. We must stay actively involved. In fact, we must be more involved than ever before because we're now at, you know, down to the wire. It's either going to be the globalists or freedom. And we have to make that clear. And we have to educate our communities and our friends and our family to recognize the dire situation, the dire threat that we're facing. And the amazing things that could happen if we could restore liberty and stop this agenda for, as Ms. Ursula von der Leyen puts it, a rules-based international order backed up by globalist military force.
Sounds so nice, doesn't it? Rules-based order. Everybody loves rules, right? And that's what we have now in Davos, Switzerland. You have all of these elites. They're all getting together and they're all like, oh my God, what do we do? How do we fight back against this? Like ideas. We need ideas. We need funds. We need stuff. And so, you know, a little bit of information has been leaking out. We have people there. Dan Lyman's there on the ground reporting. And what we've learned, they've sort of let a couple things slip. And the two things they're really talking about are climate change and NGOs. They keep talking about, aren't NGOs so important in our, you know, drive to help humanity? NGOs are going to be really important this next year. That's from the horse's mouth. That's what they say. Help me dissect that. What are they planning and how is climate change and NGOs playing into this?
Yeah, you know, that's so funny. I was literally just talking to Dan right before coming on this show. He is doing some amazing work for you guys.
He's great.
And you know, the climate change hoax, I think they're just beating a dead horse. I literally was just in Poland a couple of weeks ago for the UN Global Warming Summit, the COP24. Spent a week and a half in Poland there. And you should have seen the faces on these people. You would have thought they were at a funeral or something. You know, the yellow vests are rising up in France because they don't want to pay global warming tax. The new Brazilian government is saying, hey, this is all a Marxist hoax to destroy Western civilization. We're not participating in that. You can take your circus somewhere else next year. You're not having it here. You have Donald Trump saying that this is a scam to aid communist China. You know, it's just blow after blow to the global warming hoax. And it's such a key pillar of their agenda that they're really in a crisis situation now. They, you know, they've invested billions of dollars, all their credibility on this global warming hoax, and the climate is not cooperating. it's just not working out for them. So I think they're in a panic. And I think the NGO issue, it's so huge for people to understand this. They like to call this civil society, as if these tax-funded, ridiculous front groups, I call them rent-a-mobs, actually represented people. And so that's what you have. And you see it clearly at these UN summits. They bring in these rent-a-mobs funded by EU money and, you know, U.S. government through U.S. aid or whatever. And they say, we want climate action. And the cameras come and they say, look, the people want climate action, too.
Right.
But it's such a hoax. And as long as there's alternative voices out there like this show, like The New American, exposing this, the word's getting out. You know, people send it on email. People spread it on social media. So I think they're in a race against time because their lies are coming unglued. Nobody believes their fake media anymore. And the polls show that. So they really are, I think, in a desperate situation. And it's just such a fantastic time to be alive and to be on the right side of these issues.
Now, obviously, the danger is that these people, they do pull all the strings. They do have, you know, they hold all the purse strings. They hold all of the, you know, the leashes of the military there. They can let loose the dogs of war. So where are we in danger of, you know, is it so bad that they're going to unleash World War III out of desperation? Are they going to crash the market, the world economy, because they're losing their grip? I think not, because I don't think these people want to rule over a world of ashes. I think they want to try to keep things kind of under control. But what's your reading on where we're on this scale of danger?
Yeah, you know, you make a really good point. Yeah, I don't think they're using crises is necessarily their preferred method, especially when it puts them at risk. But I think there is a real danger. And we actually started reporting on this right when Trump was elected. We put some articles in The New American about this danger. The whole economy is just a giant scam. In fact, Trump talked about this on the campaign trail. The Federal Reserve is blowing bubbles here and there and artificially maintaining low interest rates. And all they have to do to destroy it all is just raise the interest rates, start sucking some of the money out of the system. And they could blame it all on populism and you know, Trump's reluctance to join in these multilateral free trade deal, things like that. Say, oh, those dumb American conservative voters, how dare they? Now they blew up the whole world economy, and now we just need a global currency to save everyone. So I'm not saying that is going to happen, but I'm saying it's a big risk. And I think the best antidote for that is for people to understand how the central banking scam works, the situation that they've put us in, and get that information out there. Because if they pull the rug out from under the dollar or the U.S. economy and say, well, the only solution now is a global currency run by the IMF, which have been pushing for many years. As long as Americans recognize that false solution as a false solution, we'll be okay. But if people are stampeded into going along with this, we'll be in very big trouble. So I think that's what we need to be on guard for.
Exactly. They can turn it the other way. And there you see the importance that they put on censoring social media and stopping us from getting this information out there, because the information is the antidote. It is the key. Alex Newman, my guest, Alex Newman_JOU on Twitter, thenewamerican.com. Thank you so much. Powerful stuff, folks.